Thank you, Steve. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. On behalf of Batlivala and Karani Securities, I welcome you all to the Q1 FY2025 earnings conference call of Nippon Life India Asset Management Limited. Today we have with us Mr. Sandeep Sikka, Executive Director and CEO, along with the top management team of Nippon Life India Asset Management Limited. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Sikka for his opening remarks. Over to you, sir.
Thanks a lot. I think good evening and welcome to our Q1 FY25 earnings conference call. We have with us Chief Business Officer Saugata Chatterjee, Interim Chief Financial Officer Amol Bilagi, Chief Digital Officer Arpan Sahab, Head ETF Arun Sundaresan, Head AIF Ashish Chogani, Deputy Head AIF Ashwin Dubal, and Matsui-san, nominee of Nippon Life Japan. Our detailed investor presentation and press release have been uploaded on the exchanges as well as on our website. I would like to share some comments on the recent industry trends and our performance prior to addressing the questions. I would like to start by mentioning that Q1 FY25, NAM India has achieved a profit after tax of INR 3.32 billion as well as its highest ever quarterly operating profit of INR 3.08 billion. Further, owing to consistent efforts of the business teams, our equity net sales market share and SIP market share remain well above our equity market share. Beginning with the markets, equity markets in Q1 FY25 displayed a strong performance overall. The Nifty moved up by 7.5% quarter on quarter, while Nifty mid-cap indices rose by 17 and 19% respectively. RBI held the repo rate steady at 6.5%, while the 10-year G-Sec yields moderated by 5 basis points quarter on quarter to 7.01%. Coming to the data on mutual fund industry, the industry quarterly AUM grew by 9% quarter on quarter and 37% year on year in Q1 FY25 to INR 59 trillion. Strong momentum in equity segment sustained as the share of the equity in overall AUM continued to increase, ending at 59.4% for Q1 FY25, up from 51.8% in Q1 FY24. Moving to the industry flows, the equity category, excluding index and arbitrage, witnessed a strong inflow of INR 2.54 trillion and a net flow of INR 1.1 trillion. Both gross and net inflows were higher on a quarter-on-quarter basis for the fourth consecutive quarter. Strong inflows were witnessed across sectoral and thematic, multi-cap and multi-asset allocation funds. And inflows in small and mid-cap funds were higher sequentially. While sector and thematic funds witnessed high inflows on the back of large number of NFOs, NAM India has opted to stay out of this trend. We believe that a large share of such flows into these funds come on the back of market tailwind and may not be in the best interest of the investor and is typically not very sticky. We would like to continue to focus on scaling up our existing products which have a long-term track record. That being said, we will continue to launch newer products in passive side, both index and ETFs, as and when required. Moving on to SIPs, investments via SIP routes further increased with the SIP contribution for the quarter being INR 625 billion, up 45% year-on-year and 9% quarter-on-quarter. Monthly SIP flows in June 24 stood at INR 213 billion, which was another all-time high. SIP folios increased by 7% quarter-on-quarter to 89.9 million. The fixed income category, that is both net and liquid, witnessed a net inflow of INR 123 billion after an outflow in the previous quarter. The ETF category had net inflow of INR 267 billion. At the end of the quarter, unique investors in the mutual fund industry increased to 46.9 million, that is an increase of 22% year-on-year, while the industry folios increased to 191 million. Now, moving to our business performance. We closed the quarter with total assets under management of INR 6.04 trillion. This includes mutual funds, managed accounts, offshore funds. Our mutual fund quarterly average AUM grew 12% quarter-on-quarter and 54% year-on-year to reach INR 4.84 trillion. We have seen the highest increase in quarterly AUM market share on year-on-year basis amongst all AMCs and second highest increase quarter-on-quarter. Further, on a quarter-on-quarter basis, we have been the fastest growing AMC amongst the top 10 players. I would now like to share a few highlights for the quarter. Starting with the market share, our market share increased 24 basis points quarter-on-quarter and 93 basis points year-on-year to 8.20%, with market share increase across all categories. This is the fifth consecutive quarter for market share increase that we have witnessed. Our equity market share also continues to improve. We increased by 12 basis points quarter-on-quarter and 62 basis points year-on-year to 6.88%. This is our highest equity market share post-December 2020. The share of equity AUM in our overall AUM continued to increase and stood at 49.8% for Q1 FY25, up from 49.2% for Q4 FY24. Performance for most of our equity schemes remains strong, and this, along with the distribution network, digital capabilities and strong risk management, helped to deliver near double-digit market share in net sales in equity and hybrid segment in Q1 FY24. On the segmental front, our individual AUM, which consists of retail and HI AUM, saw further market share improvement. Individual AUM grew 16% quarter-on-quarter to INR 2.98 trillion. Market share increased by 21 basis points quarter-on-quarter to 7.95%. Our corporate AUM grew 15% quarter-on-quarter to 2.11 trillion. This led to a market share improvement of 37 basis points quarter-on-quarter to 8.86. Our B30 AUM grew 16% quarter-on-quarter to 1 trillion, which keeps us among the fastest growing large AMCs in B30 locations. Our market share improved 20 basis points quarter-on-quarter to 8.98%. This segment forms 20% of our AUM versus 18% for the industry. We continue to have the largest base of mutual fund. We continue to have the largest base in the mutual fund industry with 17.5 million unique investors. We are humbled to have one in three mutual fund investors invest with us. I would now like to touch upon important aspects of our systematic book. I'm happy to share there has been a continued uptick in our systematic flows over the last 12 quarters, which has led to an increase in our market share. Of the incremental SIPs in the quarter, we had a market share of 11%. SIP market share increased by 28 basis points over March 24 to June 24, ending at 9.36%. Our monthly systematic book rose by 11% to 25.8 billion for the June 24 over March 24. This resulted in an annualized systematic book of INR 310 billion. On a year-on-year basis, monthly systematic book grew 111% over June 23 when it was 12.2 billion as against 44% growth for the industry. 59% of our SIP AUM has continued for over 5 years versus 28% for the industry. I would now like to update you on the increase on our headcount witnessed during the quarter. As some of you would have noticed from our presentation, we have increased our employee headcount by 45 employees in Q1 FY25. We have also inducted 50 more management trainees in July 24, leading to a total headcount increase of 95 employees. Of the total increase, majority are on account of increasing the team size in sales and distribution and AIF function. As mentioned in past, we will continue to invest in our future growth, whether it is talent, technology, or other areas. Moving on briefly to the ETF segment, we continue to be one of the largest ETF players with an AUM of 1.3 trillion and a market share of 17.8%, which increased by 108 basis points quarter on quarter. Our share in industry's ETF folio is 60%. We have 61% share of ETF volume on NSE and BSE. Our ETF's average daily volumes across key funds remain far higher than the rest of the industry. passive AUM, which includes ETF and index, crossed a milestone of INR 1.5 trillion in this quarter. Now, moving on to our distribution franchise. Digital transformation has always been a strong focus for Nippon India Mutual Fund. Our digital roadmap is in line with the consumer expectation crafted around innovation and ease. NIMF's digital transformation journey factors in consumers across segments, starting from the new Gen Z to the experienced investors, bringing in the need of based, need-based relevance and personalized touch. Its digital focus at NIF has been on a future-ready stance and to provide a lucid online experience to our investors and franchise. The NIMF digital stack has ensured that the users always experience frictionless solutions in its information-first economy. This has led to NIF to become a prime choice on the online customers, where every 2 seconds we have 30 consumers purchasing NIF products digitally across our digital ecosystem. Digital purchase transactions rose to 2.82 million in Q1 FY25, up 170% year on year. In the month of June 24, Nippon India Mutual Fund Digital crossed 1 million new purchase transactions. Digital business contributed to 68% of the digital new purchase transactions for Q1 FY25. Our physical distribution base is well diversified, with a wide presence across 263 locations across the country. We have over 1,04,300 distributors in total and added roughly 2,900 distributors in the quarter. Now I would like to briefly update you on our subsidiaries, namely AIF and Singapore subsidiary. Starting with our AIF business, as mentioned in past, AIF continues to be an important focus area for NAM India. On the NAM India AIF, we offer CAT 2 and CAT 3 alternate investment funds, having a total commitment of 65.1 billion across various schemes. Company has started broadening its focus across asset classes and strategies. Towards this end, we have recently launched a performing credit AIF and a long-only small cap equity AIF. Fundraising is underway and both have undertaken their initial closing. We have recently undertaken first closing of a tech VC AIF, Nippon India Digital Innovation Fund, Scheme 2A, a direct venture capital fund targeting investments in early to growth stage startups. Also, our tech VC and fund of fund launched in 2020 is in advanced stage of deployment, with nearly 84% of the commitment raised have been deployed across 12 funds. On the offshore front, we have witnessed good equity inflows in the quarter from various international geographies, and we remain positive for this trend to continue in the future as well. We will remain focused on fundraising from international markets and are looking at business opportunities with subsidiaries, associates and large network of Nippon Life. Nippon Life Japan also remains committed in supporting NAM India's offshore operations and growth. We continue to see interest in India from conventional markets like Europe, Middle East, Japan, and from unconventional markets like Latin, Thailand and Korea. Now to our financial performance. For Q1 FY25, revenue stood at 5.05 billion, up 43% year-on-year and 8% quarter-on-quarter. Other income stood at 3.31 billion, up 12% quarter-on-quarter, and 42% quarter-on-quarter. Operating profit stood at 3.08 billion, up 59% year-on-year and 9% quarter-on-quarter. Profit after tax stood at 3.32 billion, an increase of 41% year-on-year. Overall, Q1 FY25 has been another strong quarter for MF industry as well as for NAM India, and we hope this trend will continue going forward. With this, I would like to conclude my remarks and open the floor for questions.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handset while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Lalit Dio from Equirus Securities. Please go ahead.
Yes, thank you, sir, and congratulations and on a good set of numbers. So just two questions. So firstly, so with respect to the consultation paper which SEBI has come up with, so like, could you share your comments around the same, like, what, how are we looking at the case on the new asset class? And so that would be my first question.
Yeah, you want to go with the second question also, then we can try to combine it together.
Yeah, so as the second question is like, so during the quarter, like, we have seen some compression on the yield side. So what were the reasons for the same? And like, also, could you give us yields on the asset class wise, like equity, debt, liquid?
Let me take the first question, and the second one I'll request my colleague Amol to take it. With respect to the new consultation paper which has come, we are still evaluating the paper given it's out only recently. I think while the opportunity could be big, we must also be cautious that the new kind of risk associated with the new asset class and not get carried away with it. I think all options are currently open and we are trying to see how we can take advantage of it. But we want to remain cautious. I think we may, I mean, while the minimum ticket size, what has been mentioned, is 10 lakh rupees, we may evaluate to launch products which will be higher than 10 lakhs, you know, at entry level. Because I think we want investors who are really, really understand the risk associated with it to come into such products. But like I said, this is two initial days. You know, I think it just has come 2 days back. I think maybe in the next quarterly call, we'll be able to give you better clarity.
Yeah, thanks, Sandeep. So on the yield part, I think we for the quarter, we have seen a quarter on growth in equity AUM of almost 14%. And as you're aware, due to telescopic pricing, there would be pressure on the yield as at the yield contracts as the AUM grows. So that is the main reason why we have seen a contraction in the yield. So on a quarter-on-quarter basis, if you look at it, there is a 1 basis point compression in the yield. On the asset class-wise, the yields on equity stands at around 60 basis point. On debt, it's around 25 basis point. On liquid, it's around 10 to 12 basis point. And on ETF, it's around 15 basis point.
Sure, sure. And sir, in your opening remarks, you also highlighted to the fact that you would be staying out of launching products on the sectoral and thematic side, whereas in the industry, we are looking that a lot of AMCs are looking to launch products on the same, and they are garnering mobilizing funds also. So, like, what are our thought process in that? What is our thought process on the same?
I think from our point of view, we believe. And I think I mean, right now a lot of these products are being launched on with the tailwind of the markets doing well. And I think our past, I think if you were to look at past, many of the thematic funds which get launched, they are not able to do so well over a longer period of time. Our strategy would be to remain restricted to some of our core flagship products and scale them up. I think, and also if you were to deep dive into the portfolios of some of the thematic funds which have come, I mean, they are very similar to 70 to 80% are similar to the most of the diversified funds. So we will stay away from launching, getting into such themes, which, you know, I mean, seem to be very seasonal in nature. And I think we'll try to continue focusing on regular large cap, small cap, mid cap, or true to label sectoral funds, which, you know, the investor understands what he's getting into.
Sure, sir. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Shubham Bhadra from ICIC Prudential AMC. Please go ahead.
Hello. Yeah, hi. Congratulations on a great set of numbers. I had a question regarding your FY24 numbers. So if I look at your consolidated financials, the PMS revenue comes out to around 29 crores, whereas in the standalone it is 42 crores. Why is in the consolidated the revenue lower than the standalone?
So what you're referring for is 42 crores.
42 is in the standalone and 29 is in the consolidated.
But we don't disclose the we don't disclose the numbers. So where from where you're getting that numbers?
This is from the annual report. This is regarding FY24.
FY24.
Yeah.
So we'll come back to you on that, Shubham.
Okay. Nothing that you all can tell me right now.
Yeah, so we have to check that what you're referring to probably, then we can get back to you.
Okay, take care. Thank you. Great.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Madhukar Lata from Nuvama Wealth Management. Please go ahead.
Hi, good evening. Thank you for taking my question and congratulations on a great set of numbers. So just, a couple of quick questions. One, why has staff cost gone up so sharply? And so from 89 crores last year in Q4, we've gone to 105 crores. And also, even on a year-over-year basis, the jump is very material. So wanted to understand that. And what should we sort of be building in for the rest of the year? And second, the AUM is growing really rapidly. And incrementally, are we able to pass on the lower sort of TER in terms of lower distribution costs to our customers? So, or are we losing out in terms of incrementally what we are able to keep for us? We are, obviously, but, is there any way to stabilize those yields? What's the thought process on that?
Okay, thanks, Madhukar, for the question. So the reason for the increase in the employee cost are manifold. Basically, the work, first of all, is the fresh ESOPs granted during the quarter one. That has resulted in the P&L hit of around 8.3 crores, which has added to that. Another part is the increment that we had for this year, which was higher than the average past increment. So the increment was in the range of 12-13%. That is why you see that. Also, the provision for the variable pay that we have made in quarter one would be comparatively higher compared to what we did in Q1 of last year. So that is another reason why you will see the higher variance. And also this year, there was a comparatively higher spend toward the annual employee engagement activity. So these are some of the reasons why cumulatively the cost has gone up for the quarter. And if you look at the year, excluding employee cost, probably you can see an increment of around 12-13% over the full year. So as Sandeep mentioned, that we have already added 100 employees during the quarter, and we will keep on investing wherever we feel necessary. We'll keep on adding resources.
You said excluding employee costs, the other costs will go up 12-13%. I didn't
care. No, excluding ESOP cost, the overall employee ESOP cost will go up 12-13%.
Got it. Okay. Understood. Thanks. And on the other question on the yield.
Yeah.
So, Madhukar, strategy is right. So, in the past, you would have, heard from us that we had reduced the brokerage in one of our largest funds, and that continues to be one of the practice which we are doing. We, on a quarter-on-quarter basis, for all new business, what we garner, as per the TR movement, we proportionately reduce the brokerages, and that's been our practice, and we will continue to do that as we go ahead. It does not impact our business that much because the granularity of our business is very different. We have a very, very strong retail franchise, and we believe in building assets through SIP, and that's probably the reason why we continue to maintain our net sales growth on a quarter-on-quarter basis.
Understood. And just one follow-up question on the employee cost. What should be billed as ESOP cost for the year?
So the ESOP cost would be roughly in the around 45 crores for the full year.
And next couple of years, like?
So it will taper down. So as I mentioned, the first, normally whenever ESOP is granted, the first year is almost 50% of cost gets accounted in the first year, and then it tapers down to 25-26% the next year, and then it reduces further in the third and fourth year.
Understood. Got it. Thank you, and all the best.
Thank you, Madhukar.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Ranjit Bhalra, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Good evening. This is more of a suggestion or request than a question. The reports that are published and reported to the exchange, will the amounts be mentioned in lakhs and crores instead of millions and billions? Most of the people in India are more familiar with the former than the latter. Thank you.
Sure, Ranjit, we'll look into it, and if that can be done, we can definitely surely look into that.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Shreya Shivani from CLSA. Please go ahead. Hello, Ms. Shreya, your line has been unmuted. Please go ahead with your question. Hello, Ms. Shreya, your line has been unmuted. Please go ahead with your question. We will move on to the next question. The next question is from the line of Prayesh Jain from Motilal Oswal Financial Service. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Good evening, everyone. Congrats on a good set of numbers. Firstly, on, you know, if we think about the strategy with respect to branch expansion or deepening your presence, further presence into the country, what are your thoughts there? What are your strategies there? You know, you added some 2,900 distributors in the quarter, and, you know, but branch addition is not spoken about. So what is the strategy there? That would be my first question. And related to that, second question as to how should we think about your other expenses growing in this year, while, you know, you guided for the employee cost, but, you know, from the other expenses standpoint, how do we see this increasing? And coming back to the employee cost a bit, you know, with addition of employees at the sales and distribution level, do you think that this will continue, or are we reaching an optimal stage where you've invested enough for the next 1 or 2 years, or is it that, you know, you still will continue to add?
So I think I'll, actually both the questions are linked to each other. I'll try to club it together. I think presently we are present in 263 locations, and 70% of our branches are in B30 locations. So we'll continue evaluating some of our branches, which we'll be re-looking at changing, making them bigger. You know, I think as the penetration and the scale of businesses is increasing in the cities and towns, will we go really deep and add about a lot of more branches? Answer is no. I think, I mean, even if they will be, there could be 10, 15 branches in a year, but that will not be much, because we are also seeing a lot of these B30 locations, the new business, as it was mentioned in the presentation, a lot of these businesses coming to digital. So it will be a hub and spoke model, but I think for your question, will we add a lot of more branches? Having one of the largest branch franchise, yeah, I don't think so. They will add too many more branches. It could be maybe 5-10 branches in a year. That's the kind of trend, you know, I think we'll see at this point of time we see. As far as adding employees is concerned, I think, yes, we have added about employees, 94 employees in all total. 45 were added in Q1, and 50 have been added after that. Some are in sales and distribution, and also very high percentage of them are basically the new talent and the new skill set we are acquiring for our alternate investment businesses. So will this trend continue? I think seeing the, I mean, how the penetration is increasing in the country, and how we as smaller citizens are contributing, about 10% addition can happen, I think, for the next 3 to 4 years also. So about 100 more people can be added, I mean, most broadly, many of them will be at entry level. Few could be new skill set that we'll acquire for our alternate business. And regarding your cost, other cost other than X of employee cost, I think we believe it will be in the range of about, you can expect about 12 to 13% increase every year.
12 to 13% increase, and that large portion of that would be in what? Because generally, I think there should be a good scale benefits. So, large portion of this increase would come in from what elements? The digital advertisement. What would kind of take away large portion of this increase?
Majority of these will be technically investments for future. You're right. It could be digital advertising, building the brand. I think because as we go up. Because there's a lot of operating leverage as the fund, you know, today I think as we have grown, gone from 3 lakh crores to 5 lakh, touching almost 5 lakh crores, the basic costs don't go up. So, I mean, some of these are inflation-related costs, but majority of the costs are going to be investments for future.
Okay, okay. Got that. Thank you so much.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Shreya Shivani from CLSA. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Can you hear me now? Hello?
Yes,
please. Yeah.
Yeah, okay, okay, thanks. So I had a question. Congratulations on a good set of numbers. I had a question on the SIP flows. And is there any color that you guys give out on which is your segment where majority of the flows come into, not in terms of the tenure or anything that comes out in the PPT, but in terms of the product segment and any color on how those, has there been any change or any move in that segment where the SIP flows were coming? Has that shifted to any other direction? Any of those, any color on that would be useful.
Yeah, so this strategy here, I'll take this call. So the SIP, if you see the SIP flows which are coming to the industry and to us, for us the good part is we have de-risked our SIP flows across the various funds which we have today. You know, earlier, probably 2 years back, it was probably small cap was anchoring the entire SIP flows. Today the dispersion of the SIP flows have moved towards small cap, large cap, mid cap. And we are also seeing a lot of flows now coming into the sectoral funds. So that's the way the SIP book is now building for us. It is quite de-risked at this point in time. And the other part is, you know, the retail franchise which we have built along with the digital strength which we have, we are getting a lot of inflows coming in from the B30 market. The reason why our B30 market share is much more and our share of assets in B30 is much higher than the industry average. So that is the way, you know, the flow is coming. Even our average ticket size is increasing, you know. So today, because investors want to stay longer with us, they are ready to commit a higher average ticket size, which is also an area of improvement, which we have seen in the last say 6 to 12 months.
Sure, sir. And just that you mentioned B30, so should we expect whatever market share you have in B30 market, similar would be the trend with SIP flows, or how should we look at that number?
Yeah, so we have a higher, because B30 market share is now increasing, the SIP book always is higher and then the market share moves in tandem to the SIP market share. So if SIP market share, as an example, if it is say 10%, our B30 market share may be 8%, then it starts catching up, you know, as the SIP book starts building.
Okay, okay. Okay, this is quite useful. Thank you so much.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Smarab Mukherjee from BK Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you so much for the opportunity, sir. Just, you know, following up on the previous participant's question in terms of the distribution in B30. So, sir, if I see your distributed assets mix, I can see that over the last, few quarters, your MFD share in the stock has kind of slipped by maybe, 100 basis points, which has been taken up by the bank side. So just wanted to understand, you know, where would that B30 growth be reflecting in this distributed asset mix? Are we reaching out to customers through the banking channel? What is happening? And secondly, as a ramification on our yields, because, you know, as banks see some increase in share in the mix and it being a higher cost channel, is it also, putting up slight pressure on the headline numbers that we are seeing, which we have been discussing, that there's been a slight squeeze in that? So that is one. And secondly, in terms of the flows, I think the schemes that you have mentioned, I think the larger schemes continue to still, while the flow is de-risked, but the larger schemes continue to see higher share of flows. Sir, any mitigation strategies which can, result in, the smaller schemes also maybe, getting even more and more share, which can kind of help us maintain some stability in the yields? These will be my two questions. Thank you.
Yeah, so I'll just take this answer. So on the B30 side, like Sandeep also mentioned during the initial comments, there is a plethora of NFOs which have come in the industry, and typically what happens, the B30 market tends to participate more in the NFOs, and hence your B30 market share in IFA might have slipped a bit. But what we do, we are also de-risking our business in the sense if we have to broad-base, we have to go to other channels. So for us, banks is not only the private sector banks. We have a very strong PSU bank franchise which we run in the company, which is also, does give us protection on yields. And that's the way we are trying to build our volumes in these markets. On top of that, the digital penetration in B30 is also very strong for us. So if you combine all the three, aspects, we tend to get our fair share of wallet. We are continuously assessing, channels which will keep giving us inroads to a new investor. So that is the strategy which we work with. That's the first part of the question. Second part is when it comes to de-risking from a scheme perspective, like I mentioned, small cap obviously has reduced. We have moved the flows into mid cap, multi cap, large cap, sectoral funds. The entire narrative which is happening in the industry around sectoral funds, we are capturing it through SIP, because it is good to build the book through SIPs rather than having lump sum, because there are cyclical trends in these sort of schemes. So you will find sequentially as we move ahead, we'll start having more trends in these products, hopefully the mix will keep improving as we go ahead from here on. Currently, as we speak, almost 1/4 of the flows are coming from our large cap and multi cap funds. So that's again a de-risking strategy which is helped for us. And as I mentioned, this is an ongoing thing.
Understood, sir. Very helpful. Is it possible to, sir, give some indication of how, where, maybe at what level the flow shares are coming vis-a-vis that on the stock equity AUM?
Flows to stock AUM. Yeah. So you're talking about the SIP flows to our stock AUM.
Sir, the yields on the in case of flows vis-a-vis what we are receiving on the stock in case of equity oriented assets.
So we don't include that number, Saurabh. So, but safer to say that the yield on a new business would be lower than the stock.
Okay, sir. Okay. Thank you so much, and all the best, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Abhijit Sakhare from Kotak Securities. Please go ahead.
Hey, hi. Good evening, everyone. So the first is a data question. I wanted to know what would be the closing equity book. I think the average is about 2.4 trillion.
About 2.6.
Okay.
2.6.
2.6. Okay.
Yeah.
And then coming back to Chari sir on the question on yields, so in one of the earlier questions, around the current level of commission payouts, you sort of giving a sense that it doesn't seem to be a matter of too much concern. We've seen almost, I think, 10 basis points sort of a correction on the equity yields on a YOY basis. But I guess, you know, the pass-through for the distributor hasn't been to a similar extent. So what is your thought process around this, you know, when you're planning for the rest of the year or maybe, you know, 1 to 2 years? When would you kind of think about, you know, passing slightly higher share to the distributor as well?
So, Ashish, for us, as I mentioned, the telescopic TR movement, which we, you know, see in every fund, we try to replicate that in the brokerage structure to quite an extent. And reason why quarter on quarter the brokerage structures do tend to follow the glide path. Now, the obviously the previous question is that coming from the in the previous question is that coming. We have a ratio which has old assets as well as new assets, so we get protection from the old assets, you know, too. And as we progress, this is an equation where if you are bringing down the new business brokerage and the old assets continue to probably remain with us, the blended yield for us will gradually go down. It will not go down in proportion to the TR movement.
Yeah, and just to add to it, basically, having said that, we have various levers that we will keep working on to ensure that the decline in yield is not very steep.
Perfect. And then just a clarification, the commission payouts on SIP versus lump sum, is there a differential in how we have structured the overall commission structure?
No, it is similar. Same. It is both for lump sum and SIP, we have the same structure.
Got it. And sorry, one last thing, just again a qualitative sense. Given that we are staying out of the NFO market and we are sort of preferring to bring more money through the SIP route versus lump sum, you know, how does it work with the distributor, right? Because for him, you know, generally seems like there is loss of opportunity when it comes to, you know, pushing your products versus others. So do we read this as, you know, just the performance sort of doing the heavy lifting, or is there some other way we are sort of keeping ourselves relevant in the market?
So I think it's not a SAP versus lump sum. I think there are enough number of distributors who also believe in the same strategy like ours. I think it's important to be, it's far better for the investor to get into averaging through SIPs rather than lump sums. So I will not say that, I will not paint all distributors with the same brush that they want to only lump sum. Rather, the trend we have seen is very different. I think a lot of distributors and AMCs thinking in the interest of the investors prefer the SIP route. So I don't think so. We have to, you know, make an extra effort for it. It's a question of like-minded. It's a thought process that I think it works good for the investor. If it works good for the investor, it's good for the distributor, it's good for the AMC.
Okay. Thank you so much. All the best.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Jignesh Chihilal from InCred Research. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Am I audible?
Yeah, please go ahead.
Yeah, perfect. Just wanted to, you know, check. I mean, it's more of a curiosity I'm asking. We are seeing that your overall market share ex ETF and equity is also 6.88, which is roughly 12 bps higher, right? So, and even your market share, your ETFs have also seen a significant improvement sequentially. So with ETF also, if we see it up, like what other large AMC gives it, we improvement.
Business, can you repeat your question?
So your equity market share, excluding ETFs, is 6.88. Correct, which is 12 bps kind of a rise sequentially.
Yeah, correct.
Yeah, so if you put with ETF also, we will be seeing a significant improvement only, right? I'm just wanted to reconfirm because I see sequentially your ETF market share also has gone up.
Correct.
Right. So if we even including ETFs, our market share would have been going up only, right? That is my correct understanding.
Yes. 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 Correct.
Okay. Okay. And secondly, we are seeing
different. Others separately, but your understanding is correct. If you were to see both ETF and equity, the market share has gone up. From
100
basis point and more than
100
basis point in
equity. Yeah, that is what I was actually assuming. I just wanted to reconfirm it. And number two, we have been I've been tracking for a while, quite longer period of time. We are seeing a significant improvement on the corporate segment side. Retail and HNI had been and you have been decent, but corporate is also right now is doing good for us. And our direct flows have also, direct channel has also seen a significant improvement. So anything specific you want to mention for this particular segment? Because once the debt market, opens up, which we are seeing now, the flows are improving. The corporate plays an important role. Anything worth highlighting that would be here or something that you want to, comment upon? That is the only thing I wanted to understand.
Broadly, if you were to see, there has been an improvement in all segments, retail, HNI, corporates, and all asset classes. I think I will not attribute to anything specific that we have done in the last quarter, but a lot of things we have done in the last 5 or 6 years. Mm-hmm. And a lot of these things come with a lag effect. So I think definitely things are falling in place, and we see structurally, I think, across all segments and asset classes, I think we feel for the investments that we have done and the way the company is positioned, we will benefit with higher inflows and higher market share in times to come.
Right. Just roughly one more thing. We have we almost 90% profits we are distributing as dividends, roughly around 90%. Our ROE has been significant improvement, calculated somewhere around 30% now. But do we that number will continue to go with our dividend still policy remaining payout still remaining at the similar level? Can we assume that the ROEs can even cross 40% plus over a period of next 1 or 2 years? Is that a fair assumption? Just assumption I'm asking for.
No, I think I will not be able to do the futuristic thing. I'm sure you can put it in the spreadsheet and see how it will look like. But I think from our perspective, I think the board of the company has a very clear view to keep sharing the profits of the company with all shareholders, including minority shareholders, and we'll continue with that trend. But ROE, this business has high operating leverage. As the AUMs increase, the expenses do not go up the same way, but we'll not be able to give a number to it. But yeah, for this quarter, the ROE was 32%.
Correct. Perfect. That sounds great. Thank you so much, sir, and all the best.
Thank you.
The next question is from the line of Bhavin Pandey from Athena Investments. Please go ahead.
Congratulations on a wonderful set of numbers. I just wanted to draw your attention to slide 44 regarding operating leverage. Of course, assets are sort of futuristically are a factor of how markets do, and profits in terms of the manifestation of that. But looking at variables which are controllable, do we think that if things sort of go in tandem, we could see some sort of accretion happening on per branch and per employee basis?
So, hi, Amol here. Thanks for the question. So if you look at our expenses, like almost 53% of our expenses come from the employee cost, okay, of which almost 25% would be a variable component of it. Okay, so whenever there are tough times, probably that is which is directly into the profit of the companies, right? So as and when there is internal profitability, that component will automatically come down. On the other expenses part, the majority of the expenses would be fixed in nature, except for some part of marketing and everything that are variable, and that can be depending on the market situation, that can be tapered down a little bit. But excluding that, I think most of the expenses are fixed and they will continue.
But the discretionary expenses, depending on the market conditions, one can take a call on them. Mm-hmm. But having said that, as we have always said, we see this business from a long-term point of view. We would not like to cut down short-term cost and investments, which can give us long-term benefits.
Okay.
Secondly, on the expanding on the employee expenses front, of course, you know, variable payouts and headcount addition, they are sort of cyclical in nature and would keep happening for business cycles. But we have seen this trend of spending on employee engagement. So, do you think this would also continue, or it's more of a cyclical thing that's prevailing right now?
I think I will not say this is cyclical, but I think maybe this is post-COVID and all has happened for the first time. I think, broadly it will continue. Whether the expense amount will be the same or not, that is still a question mark. But employee engagement remains in a very important part of the strategy of the company, because ultimately you have 1,000 plus employees, small cities and towns, you have to engage with them, get them together. So all those things play an important role, but employee engagement will continue. Amount will be difficult to ascertain at this point.
Of course, it's difficult to quantify that. And just lastly on, adjustment of commission account of the TR formula with the distribution partners, of course, their TR on an absolute basis would also go down. Sorry, their share of TR would go down. So do you think the industry-wide spread of this activity would happen? Or have it already started happening that other AMCs are sort of adjusting payouts with the distributors?
I think I will not be able to comment on behalf of the industry in this call. I think it will depend basically which AMC wants to work on mark, top line or bottom line. I think for us, again, as I mentioned in the earlier question, our focus will remain on profitable growth, and I think rather than only top line.
That's great. Mr. Sikka, congratulations to you and your team for the wonderful quarter, and good luck.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you. This will be the last question for today's conference call. It's from the line of Prateep, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Hi, congratulations for the great set of results, and I hope it continues going forward. My question is on AIF. That I just want to see, I was just seeing on the website, on AIFs, we are taking stakes in these companies who are doing AIFs, or we are doing mix of both?
Can you repeat the question, please?
My major question is on AIF. I just want to ask that I was seeing on the website that we have some funds which we are taking stakes in. So these are the companies which we are taking stakes in who are doing AIF, or it's a mix of both that we have our own AIFs and we are doing some other companies as well?
So I think I'll just try to clarify. I think this is in reference to our tech fund of fund, venture fund, which was launched in 2020. That fund, actually, we considered it as a fund of fund. It was about $183 million was invested from investors in Japan. And that has invested in 12 different funds. Our idea is not to take stakes. I think we are an LP in one, all these, based on the constitution of the fund and with our LPs what has been decided. So we are not buying stake in this thing. We are investors in them.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, just wanted to add on the earlier question. So there was a question from Shubham of ICICI to AMC on why the PMS and advisory fee in the standalone is higher than your console. So just wanted to clarify on that. So if you look at on the standalone basis, that contains includes the offshore advisory fees that we receive from our Singapore subsidiary. So when we do the consolidation, that gets eliminated, and that's why the figures in the consolidated numbers are below the numbers in the standalone balance sheets. And also, there was a question on the closing AUMs. So just wanted to provide the numbers. So on the equity, the closing AUM is around 2.598 billion. On the debt side, it's 733 billion. On liquid, it's 336 billion. And on the ETF, it is 1402 billion. Yeah. Thank you.
Hello, Mr. Pradeep, does that answer your question?
Yeah, thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that was the last question for today's conference call. I would now like to hand the conference over to the management for closing comments.
Yeah, thank you all for joining the call. Have a happy weekend.